afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adusk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Wednesday, May 31st, 2017. Thank you for joining us today. Good afternoon, Al.
Oh, Melody.
Oh, there's tons of things to talk about today. We do have Wendy Wilson joining us for the first segment of the program today to talk about our health, as she keeps us healthy, and we're here to keep you wealthy. And but gold today first. We'll go over the markets, then we'll get to Wendy. Gold today up 560. A good day for gold today, 1269.40. You have silver, a little pressure, 7 cents at 1741, and that was to the downside. Platinum was up $10 today at 952. Palladium was up 13 at $822. The USDX today took a little bit of a tumble today, down 0.32 at 97.02. Crude oil followed, down big 1.43 at 48.23. And the paper markets today, they had pressure on it, came back a little bit here in the last hour of trade, half hour of trade. The Dow was down 23 points at 21,005. The NASDAQ, after it reached another record peak, pulled back 4 points at 61.98. The S&P was down 1 at 24.11. 10-year yield, 2.20%, down 0.02. And, of course, the euro was higher, up 0.43 at 1.12. Interesting day in the markets. If you watched them today, the way they traded, it's just waiting for the shoe to fall, folks. And I hope you're not waiting for that shoe to get your gold and silver. So get it before it does drop. Give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. We have Wendy Wilson joining us from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody. And hello, Al.
Hello, Wendy.
I thought we'd talk about scientifically just how much of medicine is a myth. Any guesses out there?
I wouldn't be surprised if it was like 60-70%.
Ooh, he's close. How about you, Melanie? Want to take a guess?
50.
Well, you know, we're always told about, you know, modern medicine is this evidence-based scientific medicine, but it's actually come under fire lately with some exposures to a lot of the research, either with medical devices and drugs that have been downright fabrications. So what can patients count on with regard to the integrity and truthfulness of modern medicine? And medical doctors, you know, they see patients, so they really don't have time to do a lot of this clinical research. Therefore, they're relying on the scientific researchers to report on treatments regarding drug therapies and surgery. Now, I've heard different estimates on what part of the research can be verified or duplicated in a peer review. It's been as low as 2% and as high as 38%. So we're going to check this out. But let's say the FDA approves of a drug to be used for a specific condition, and then physicians tend to use this drug for what is called an off-label use. So human beings are really not identical, and a disease in one individual is not the same in another. Therefore, a diagnosis is really not a definite entity. So an example, it would be the drug for a diabetic nerve pain, and that it may have an off-label use for other causes of nerve pain, because the FDA may consider all nerve pain to be the same and approve the off-label use. But in medicine, doctors are referring to this as a, quote, fiction of convenience. And one physician put it this way: the disease process and diagnosis are not neat separate entities, but the FDA pretends that they are. So a science is really engaging in what is called a lot of non-evidence-based therapy, which they often criticize alternative medicine for, calling it quackery. And medical science considers alternative therapy to be highly improbable and lacking compelling evidence, and therefore they feel it's based on a hunch. Here's a quote from Dr. Jason Novella, who says, 100% of the clinical decisions I make are based upon the available evidence-based plausible research combined with what I know. I have often used unproven plausible natural therapies when no evidence-based treatment is available. End of quote. That's pretty huge.
Yeah, it's interesting. Guy's got an open mind.
Yeah. Well, so let you know, science tends to be self-defined. It's self, what doctors say, medical physicians say that their profession is self-critical. It's based on evidence. However, not all the evidence is available, is able to be viewed and factored into a lot of this research, making the results less than proven. If you can't duplicate the research, then what do you call that? You call that, you know, fabrication. Now, so the industry is allowing a lot of this junk science to influence their treatments, and I'm sure doctors are even wondering on these scientific studies they read in their journals, which are confirmed through replication and which are just junk science that was motivated by the, you know, greed of grant money. So this is a problem, you know. What can patients count on? That's just the question. Here's a quote from Novella. He says, science-based medicine is hard. He says, we are overwhelmed with probable evidence, and it is impossible to keep up with it all. I think we would benefit from a system of continuing medical education that was more systematic and less haphazard. So that's pretty huge, too, if a doctor thinks his field is becoming more haphazard. That worries me.
Well, it sounds to me like what I understand about medicine, they criticize traditional medicine, alternative medicine. They say it's a hunch. But part of the reason it's a hunch is because they have made it the process of approving a new drug is so rigorous, right? So expensive that only major corporations can afford to do it. And the real difference between the major corporations and these people who are making hunches is not, it's not about the quality of the science necessarily or the perception. It's about who's got enough money to actually meet the government regulations.
Right. Well, this was also something that concerned me because in 2012, the University of Colorado in Denver, they discovered that often in the scientific research, which, you know, people are paying hundreds of thousands of dollars for, if not millions, especially the studies involving cancer research that were conducted using the wrong cancer cells. So if you know anything about research, is one set of researchers will put forth this publicated study, and then another group of researchers will launch some scientific research based on that previous study. So you see where the problem is. If there's a problem with the original study, then all the other studies are going to be wrong. So incorrect research is being published, and oncologists utilize the treatments to give their patients that, you know, are based on a lot of this corrupted research. So this happens, according to the researchers at Colorado University. They say this happens more often than we think in scientific research when tests are done on cell lines that have nothing to do with the medical topic. For instance, Dr. Andrew Bradford and his colleagues discovered that the breast cancer research that was published in the Journal of Gynecology Oncology, which recommended some new treatments, used genetically different cells than required for the research, according to Bradford, that he and his students, he makes them test all the cells that they get for a study because a lot of times they're mislabeled. Also, a colleague of his, Dr. Christopher Korch, said there's up to 40% chance that the cells in the container don't match what's on the label. And Dr. Bradford and Korch say that there's really no excuse for all this junk science review. They go on to say in the past, the technology to check cell lines didn't exist, but today it's cheap, it's easy, the technology is widely available to confirm the cells. There's really no excuse to experiment on cells without first confirming them. They've gone on to say they've suggested to the medical journals that they start requiring verification on cell lines as a prerequisite for publication. So since Dr. Bradford suggested that to avoid the junk science, that all published research require all the testing on the cell lines to identify, you know, the jumpstart for the study, you may wonder how sophisticated these tests are. You know, does it take a licensed medical physician to run these tests? Do you have any idea, Al?
It probably takes a, you probably need a high school GED.
Well, you're so spot on. According to Dr. Bradford, this test is so simple and accurate. It's the same test Scotland Yard or any forensic investigator uses to identify DNA on suspects. So Dr. Bradford adds that since there's a 40% chance the lab has sent you the wrong cell line to test, it brings to question, he says, decades of research on the medical treatments that are based on them.
That's what you're implying.
I'm not implying, he is.
what I'm getting out of this by implication is that at least 40% of the time when they send a cell line to deal with breast cancer, maybe it's actually a cell line that's been from the from a prostate examination. Now, am I missing the misunderstanding?
No, you're not. Actually, you're really close on another report I'm coming up to here. But first, I wanted to explore, let listeners know, how can these cell lines be so wrong, you know? Isn't science supposed to be more accurate? Well, according to Dr. Bradford, he says that there can be a lot of cross-contamination in the lab. He says, for instance, some cultures can fly and become airborne. And he also said technicians, if they're not careful, can accidentally touch their pipettes using different cell lines and cross-contaminate. Also, he said contaminated cells tend to be aggressive. Once they get into another container, they tend to take over. And also, labs typically, he says, don't quarantine cells when they arrive when they should be. They only quarantine afterwards if they've been identified. Now, Dr. Keith Skillman of the School of Medicine, University of Colorado, says the studies on cervical cancer can easily be flawed for using endometrial cancer cell lines because they are not the same genetic pathway. Another example he gives is the studies on prostate cancer that unknowingly use cervical cancer cells, and that's going to be flawed because men have prostates, they don't have cervixes. So during all this investigation, the team at the University of Colorado found that 50% of thyroid cell lines were contaminated and misidentified. So the thyroid studies are all messed up because they were actually done on melanoma cells and colon cancer cells.
Just incredible. Do you think their accounting procedures are as screwed up as their scientific procedures?
I don't know. I mean, I guess there could be a lot of error. You know, they tell you in a lot of these studies, there's a 20, if you go and have like a study done at the lab and the results come back, there's a 20% error margin. Okay. Right off the
top. I bet there's not a 20% error margin in what the profits are.
but you know, okay. So now we got a 40% chance that all this research, you know, it's just been undermined. And how many drugs and how many procedures and radiation and this and that have been recommended for stuff that wasn't even the right cells?
Which indicates a kind of liability here.
No kidding. There's this book by Richard Harris. He's wrote a book. He's actually the NPR science correspondent. And his book is titled Rigor Mortis, How Sloppy Science Creates Worthless Cures, Crushes Hopes, and Wastes Billions. He's pretty scathing in his book. He says thousands of breast cancer studies are totally useless because they were conducted on the wrong type of cells. Rather than using breast cancer cells, the researchers wrongly identified cells that were actually melanoma cancer cells. And this means thousands of papers and investigated research and experiments were done on the wrong disease. Wow.
It's just astonishing.
I know. The more I dig, I go, whoa, now.
Mind-boggling.
And then I'm saying to myself, now who's the quack, right?
Yeah, exactly right.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, science has really got a crisis on their hands. Harris is actually nailing all them to the wall. And, you know, because really all this research has been set back decades using the wrong cells. He also reminds us that breast cancer was not the only area of medicine that was affected. Like a disease, this sloppy research has spread into research, causing one of the most precarious dilemmas science has ever created for itself, aside from creating superbug bacteria through the creation and overuse of antibiotics. He goes on to say that you know, well, who can blame him? He's kind of getting sticking it to him. He said this debacle has shaken our trust in scientific medicine, and either the checks and balances were not in place or used or were just swept under the rug. I typically think a lot of it was a cover-up scenario because a majority of these studies couldn't be replicated with the same results, but they got published anyway. And so Harris describes it as the gold standard in medicine to double-check the findings has really fallen by the wayside. And he states that on a very good day, you may find 50% of the studies may have some stand against further investigation, but a lesser amount can be replicated data. So this is just terrible. I'm like, oh wow, what percentage of the treatments the majority of patients are getting out there are just whimsical?
I understand.
And not
it's like you're
based.
Dealing with witch doctors. Just roll some bones and you know, do a chant.
Well, and
I mean, nobody knows what you're telling me is that what you're implying is there are people who are dying.
Right.
They have breast cancer, for example, and they're taking some drug that actually works very well with prostate cancer or cervix cancer, but it doesn't have anything to do with breast cancer. What is this? Who is liable? And what, you know, I mean, there's a problem here.
No kidding. Well, you know, at the very least, you know, this is fraudulent in several ways because this junk science that has been allowed to go on is costing taxpayers over $28 billion a year. And like you said, think of the tremendous cost besides that, you know, patients paying for treatments that would never help or save them. This is, you know, and, you know, the insurance companies should be like up in arms too because they're paying the bills. But, you know, and the other thing that comes to mind is what Dr. Anthony Morris said is that vaccines are the most highly guarded secret in medical science. What do you think of that?
I don't think they're talking about the formula per se. They're not saying that the formula is highly guarded.
No.
They're saying that the efficiency is highly guarded.
Yeah. I spoke to him in the 90s. He said it's totally fraudulent and bogus. You don't create an antibody with an artificial infection. The immune system does not. When it sees the bacteria in the blood, it thinks it's supposed to be there. Wow. Maybe another day we'll talk about virology. But
I tell you, it's just mind-boggling, and it scares you. Why do we really want to go to see the doctor?
Well,
it really does say you need to take care of yourself.
It does,
the doctor should be a last resort, not the first place you go. You need to be you need to take care of yourself. Give us a little contact information, Wendy.
Sure. Well, I typically use medicine for trauma. That's about it. Yeah, they can call us and get a free catalog at Apothecary Herbs. The number's toll free at 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663, or visit us at the web, thepowerherbs.com. Thanks, guys.
All right, Wendy, thanks very much. That's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com, 866-229-3663. Give her a call. Melody and I are going to we're gonna take a break, a couple of commercials. Be right back. Please stay tuned.
We will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom, and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
Oh, we have a little special today. I'm going to continue with the 90% silver, $25 face value, and a 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle. And that little package today is $485. That includes all your shipping costs. $485 for $25 face value of 90% silver. They are quarters. And it's and a 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle. It's a nice little package. It's a good package to get started. You can buy one or 100 of these packages. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. 1-800-375-4188. New client today. It's a sister of one of my clients. And we were talking, and she said to me, she says, I've talked to my brother for many years. We talk about gold and silver. She says, but I never, you know, just wasn't, didn't feel the need for it. And she says, I can't tell you, Melody. She says, I just have this real uneasy feeling. She says, something's going to happen. She says, I don't know if it's going to be tomorrow or 6 months. I don't know if it's going to be 6 months or a year. And she says, and I never get these feelings. And I says, well, you're not the only one, because I hear that a lot. And I get this feeling because I know what's going on. I see what's behind the scenes, and I see, you know, how things are being moved and not being moved. So I thought it was interesting that someone who decided to come into the market is beginning to feel very unsure what is going on here and around the world. And I can't tell you enough. And I saw an interview today, and he's a popular guy that gets interviewed on, you know, some of these internet programs and so forth. He's always wrong on all his predictions, even whether gold, oh, it's going to break.
He speaks with confidence, right?
He speaks with confidence. But he said today, I was watching, I thought, I wonder what he said now. So I turned on this interview, and he's talking about, well, you know, it's been very difficult to be accurate on these predictions. And it's like, no kidding. You can't predict a manipulated market. You can't predict, and, you know, if gold is going up, you know, over and passes resistance level, it is based on charts. That's why they're always wrong. And not only that, it isn't just that the market is rigged. It's just that these charts can't tell you what's going to happen. They don't understand the big picture. They don't understand the elite. They don't understand the agenda. And if they do understand it, they're not bringing it in their equations. Al and I, you and I have been more right than anyone, because we tell you, you can't predict. You don't know when this is going to happen. Just like my lady customer said, she says, it can be today, tomorrow, next year. She says, but it's soon. It's sooner than later. And was his final conclusion. It's like, you can't really predict. Like, no kidding. It's what we've been telling people for years. And so you can't wait for something to happen to get prepared. You have to do
it. Yeah, that's the thing about it. Nobody, you know, if we could sit back and say, this is absolutely going to happen on December 15th, okay, that means you can goof off and party time and the rest of that sort of thing until December 14th and then run to the store and get all your supplies. But we don't know about December 15th. We don't know when it's going to happen, but it is inevitable, and it seems increasingly imminent. We can't tell you an exact date, but the implication is, you know, it's like the second coming of the Messiah. Christ says, look, watch out. I'm coming like a thief in the night. Nobody knows when. Be ready. Be ready. Be ready. Huh? This is not far removed from that concept. You have to get ready before the fact, and we don't know. Nobody knows when that fact's going to be. So,
and I've been more accurate, more on a short-term basis for gold rising and falling. I mean, I know the trend for gold and silver, and you know how long ago was it that you know $1,300 was a resistant level? I said no, it's $1,260, and that's exactly what we've been seeing. And so we had a nice day today. It closed above. And we're, you know, keeping that level. So, yes, I would predict the next level would be 1300. I mean, so it will be. And so don't wait, folks. We got some great prices on everything. Let's go ahead. I know everyone is talking, and I'm going to talk about it very little, but Kathy Griffin, CNN cuts her from her New Year's Eve special that she has with Anderson Cooper. And I can't stand that woman. I never thought she was funny. She talks too much. Her mouth never stops. And she did that video yesterday as a beheaded President Trump, and she held it up. She later came out with a phony, phony apology. There wasn't any, I have more sincerity in my, you know, my little toe than her apology. And so good for I'm not a CNN fan, but good for CNN, and let's make sure they don't bring her back. It was a disgusting thing that she did. It was just repulsive. It was, and she did it all, I don't know why she did it, you know, just to get attention.
She did it to put
well,
more
she
butts
got
in
attention.
The seats at her next
yeah, she got attention, all right. So and I can remember, and I'm glad CNN cut her, because I can remember the old, it was a rodeo, and you had some clown out there, you know, who goes out there and tries to attract the steer so he doesn't, you know, hurt the guy that was riding him and falls off. He had an Obama mask, and he was fired, thrown out of the rodeo, and I don't think he could ever have been a clown again. He was just totally not hireable after that, and he just wore a mask. And she certainly did something far, far more repulsive and disgusting. And,
well, in her apology, she says that she gets it. This was wrong. She's over the line. And I'm curious whether she gets it that it's wrong in anything like a moral sense, or is it an uncivil sense, or is it merely bad for business? Is it wrong in the sense that, it's going to cost her $500,000 or whatever?
Well, there was no sincerity in it, so no, there was no, thought more than her paycheck. She got the attention. I figured she even told the guy that she did the video with something about this is wrong, or we're going to get in trouble. So she knew exactly what they knew exactly what they were doing. So how could her apology be sincere?
There's a report that Barron Trump, who is Donald Trump's youngest son, and I don't know his age, but I'm guessing he's 8, 12. 10 years old. I don't know how old he is. 12 years old, something. I don't know.
10 to 12.
All right. In any case, he saw that picture and he panicked. He thought it was real. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, sometimes you think you're doing things that are pretty clever and pretty funny, and we all are inclined to pull little pranks from time to time. But there can be, you know, like, look who's laughing, Miss April 1st. It's April Fool's Day. But you know, that is very unfortunate. The son of the man you're claiming to behead or, you know, sees that, you terrorize children that way. I'm sure she never intended to do it, but it's one of the things that maybe you have to think about a little bit. Well, I can't remember the guy who used to be on the Seinfeld. He had a comedian. And he went off after Seinfeld closed down, and he was doing a show somewhere, and he got into a contest with some one or more blacks in the audience, and that terminated his career. It may be that she's terminated her career right now also.
I hope so. I truly hope so. And I hope this gives signs to anyone else that randomly says these terrible things. I mean, she's not the only one who has, you know, Madonna. Look what Madonna said. She had thoughts of blowing up, you know, the way. I mean, what right do these people have to say this stuff without any, backlash?
Well, there's freedom of speech and the rest of that, but there is a point where you have
fire.
To be somewhat reasonable about what you say.
You don't yell fire in a crowded deal. So CNN, I think that'll be the only time that I say good job to CNN. But anyway, this just came out. House Intelligence Panel issues 7 subpoenas in Russian probe, 4 related to Russian investigation, 3 to unmasking controversy individuals. The House Intelligence Committee issued 7 subpoenas in a sign that its investigation into alleged Russian meddling in the 2016, which I can't even imagine. I mean, what length are they going to so far with all they've had? They've had no evidence of anything, but yet they just continue. You know, they're not going to stop. The Republican-led committee issued, but this is a Republican-led committee, issued 4 subpoenas related to the Russian investigation. 3 subpoenas are related to questions about how and why the names of associates of President Donald Trump were unredacted and distributed within classified reports by the Obama administration officials during the transition. The committee has subpoenaed the National Security Agency, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and the Central Intelligence Agency for information about what is called unmasking. Republicans on the committee have been pushing for a thorough investigation of how the names of Trump's campaign officials became exposed in classified intelligence reports based off intelligence community intercepts.
No secrets in the internet age.
These subpoenas seek information requests made by former National Security Advisor Susan Rice, former CIA Director John Brennan, and former United Nations Ambassador Samantha Power for names to be unmasked in classified material. So, the investigation continues.
Well, the investigation, they're probably still investigating who killed Kennedy. And there's probably still some little guy is down in a basement office, a little cubicle down there. Hello.
Well, what they should be concentrating on is our debt ceiling.
And, I understand.
You know, this can't, how much longer are they going to ignore this? And coming out, it was CNN Money today, and they talked about, when are they going to get to this? They can't afford to ignore it much longer. They're either going to have to raise or suspend the debt ceiling. So this is what they should be concentrating on. This is what they should be paying attention to. Maybe the health care.
This is not far away. This is not a problem for 2018 or something like that. This is a situation where, according to some reports, I don't know if this is still true, but at least some reports back a month, 6 weeks ago, the government only had enough cash to keep going till the end of June or beginning of July. All right? At that point in time, they run out of cash. At that point in time, they must either raise taxes, which will cause everybody to howl, or they have to borrow more money, right? Which will increase the national debt. And on top of which, they've already borrowed as much money as they can legally borrow under the debt ceiling. So we are coming to a moment here, and the other people are anticipating that this is going to be resolved maybe in September. Now, maybe we don't even get that far, but we are coming to a moment where somebody's going to have to face up to the debt. And if there are congressmen, and there very well may be, I know that, are there enough congressmen to stop us from going deeper into debt? There are people who actually get elected as Republicans, and they are serious. Unlike the majority of Republicans, to my mind, who are just Democrats and wearing a mask. But there are some Republicans up there who really don't want to go any deeper into debt, and they're not going to cooperate with raising the debt ceiling. Now, maybe we'll watch and see. Are there enough of them to postpone? I mean, are there enough of them to prevent the debt ceiling from being raised? I don't know. But I think the answer is yes. I think there are enough. Doesn't mean it'll necessarily happen, but I think it could happen. There's a possibility, because if they weren't there, this should have been resolved. I mean, we're already dealing. We hit the debt ceiling in 2015, and they did some emergency Band-Aids and whatever, and they said, well, we'll put it off until 2017. We don't have to worry about it. Nobody did anything. They had a year and a half to basically try to do something about the debt ceiling. We came to the debt ceiling on the 15th, 16th of, this month? And it was postponed for another. We've got a few more months to go. But if this is a serious issue, they have three choices. They raise taxes, they cut government programs, or they borrow more money. What's it going to be? And people are going to scream no matter what they do. Raise taxes, people are going to scream. Cut government programs, people are going to scream. Extend the debt ceiling, some people are going to scream. So you can borrow more. So, I don't know. Well, you can expect we're going to hear some people screaming within the next several months, this year. This is a big situation. And if it wasn't, they would have addressed this more successfully in 2015. They wouldn't have just put it off to 2017, and then when we got to it in 2017, they put it off again, they postponed it, kicked the can down a little further down the road, but we're running out of road. And what do you think they're going to do, Melody? Are they going to raise taxes, cut programs, or borrow more money, or raise the debt ceiling so they can borrow more money?
All of it. I can't say both.
I couldn't say something, Melody, but I can't say that either. There's things you can't say. There's things I can't say. It's a very frustrating kind of conversation where both sides are. There are things neither one of us can say here.
What are my options again?
They're going to raise it.
Yeah. They're going to raise taxes, and they're going to cut benefits. It's that simple.
I think they'll cut
That's
benefits.
That's all they can the do. Ceiling.
I don't think they'll raise taxes.
Yeah, well, of course they.
I don't think they'll raise taxes right now. I think they'll and cut some program.
No, they have to cut. They have to do both.
We'll see. Let's take a break. Couple more commercials. Melody and I will be back in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Alfred Addison with Miller Secret on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Well, I just wanted to make a brief comment on two things. You have Elon Musk. He says he's going to step down from President Trump's advisory councils if he decides to, Mr. Trump decides to withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement. He says he's done everything possible to lobby the president to keep the U.S. in the treaty. He says, don't know which way Paris will go, but he's done all he can do to advise directly to POTUS through others in the White House and via councils that we remain. He says that he would have no choice but to depart. Well, there was reports that Trump has expected to leave the climate deal, but with caveats. President Donald Trump's expected to withdraw the United States from the agreement. Though Trump and aides were looking for, caveats in the language related to the exit and had not made a final decision. Trump said he's hearing from a lot of people both ways. He told reporters as he welcomed Vietnamese Prime Minister to the White House today. He says he'd be announcing his decision very soon. Leaving the deal would fulfill a central campaign pledge, but would anger international allies who spent years in difficult negotiations. Trump faced considerable pressure to hold to the deal during the European leaders this past weekend. So is the deal good for the United States,
or do we need to be in this deal so we can subsidize the other parties to the agreement?
I'm not so sure he's actually pulled out yet. He's considering it, but I haven't heard that the final thing has. We heard from his advisor, his economic advisor, during his trip abroad that Gary Cohen had told reporters during the trip that Trump's view on climate change were evolving. So we're not quite sure what that means. So I would say you'll probably see some sort of a change. I doubt if we're going to pull out 100%. I wouldn't think we would.
You think it's just a negotiating ploy where he's going to say, all right, we'll stay, but you got to give us a special deal?
Perhaps. Yeah.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
That wouldn't surprise me, but we'll watch and see. They're either going to make this deal more attractive to the United States, or Trump will dump it. That'd be my guess.
Yeah, so, you know, and who knows if we're already in the treaty to exit, and they make it difficult for you to exit. So we're not quite sure what that entails, but we also have...
Huh? You've got enough Poseidon submarines, you can exit from anything you want to exit from, Melody.
Yeah, well, you have the Bilderberg group meeting. That begins, I believe, tomorrow to the 4th. This year's gathering takes place in Chantilly, Virginia, which is about 30 miles from the White House. And, of course, you know, they're going to discuss the Washington, probably as the top, Mr. Trump, as the top agenda. There's 131 people who've confirmed they're attending. At least that's the list that they've released to the public. You know, it's real interesting now that after, you know, all these years where all of us have exposed the Bilderbergers and their private and secret meetings, now they're releasing all the information. They actually release a list of who's attending. And, you know, that's probably not the real list. Or
no, I understand. That means the Bilderbergers no longer count. They're just a front for whoever's really calling the shots. That's just a collection of puppets that are going to Bilderberger meeting. Now the unknown.
Well, I did look at the list, and there's a lot of insurance people in there, which I, you know, the list is, I mean, usually you have heads of states, you have, you know, maybe they just didn't want to come to Chantilly, Virginia. Maybe they didn't want to come to the U.S., who knows, for whatever reason. But usually you have far more heads of states, far more government people. This year there was a lot of business, a lot of insurance companies that I saw in there. You have Wilbur Ross, he's going. You have Larry Summers, he's attending. Of course, Kissinger is attending. But you don't, I mean, before you would see, you know, the Clintons, you'd see, the, you know, European royal families, you'd see Gates, you'd see, you know, all of these, not so much this year, so.
You know what, that's actually encouraging. It indicates that they really do have a problem. They don't just have absolute control over the masses, for lack of a better term, and when enough awareness and antagonistic comments are brought to bear on an organization like the Bilderbergers, some people say, let me out of here. This is getting to be too much trouble. And it may be there is another level of secrecy now, and there's one, the real movers and shakers are acting in secret, and the Bilderbergers have become kind of a ladies' auxiliary for the real secret elite. But just the same, it's evidence that we the people can have an effect. It, admittedly, it took a couple decades of criticizing the Bilderbergers to have an effect, but it does appear that we're having an effect.
Yeah. How deep or underground they went, who knows? And, you know, where the other level is appearing. But at least it is no longer a secret meeting. And so, yes. Again, a good thing, Al. Good thing.
Maybe they've all moved to Chicago. I've got an article here from Breitbart.
It's a good place for them.
Yeah, it probably is. Here's a headline from Breitbart. Gun-controlled Chicago. At least 53 shot, 4 killed over the holiday weekend. At least 53 people were shot and wounded, and 4 were killed during Memorial Day weekend violence in gun-controlled Chicago. See, there's a point about gun control laws. Criminals, by definition, do not obey the law. And so when you outlaw guns, for example, pass laws, I don't know what you're thinking about that makes anyone think that the criminals are going to pay any attention to that. They're willing to shoot people. They're certainly willing to pack a gun, whether it's legal or it's not legal. And when you pass these laws, what you do is you get the law-abiding people, you render them defenseless against the criminals. It's the law, the gun control law, that gets these 53 people shot and 4 killed. That's what's causing this. They're saying it's the guns. No, it's the politicians who are restricting the supply of guns to people who actually obey the law. The Chicago Tribune reports that the violence brought the number of shooting victims to nearly 1,500 for January 1st through May 30th of 2017. That's an average of 10 shooting victims per day. The violence brought the number of homicides to 242. That's 1.6 per day over the first 150 days of the year. And moreover, at least 60 people were shot and killed in May alone. That's 2 a day. The rate is rising, and we are just now beginning to get into summertime. The weather is just beginning to get warmer. We can reasonably wonder what's going to happen in Chicago. How many people are going to get shot this summer in Chicago? Will it be enough for somebody to actually even ask for martial law? Is that too far out, Melody, or do you think martial law is a possibility?
Well, you have to look at, I mean, they're just, it's gang members. It's gangs and drugs. And, you know, hey, if they want to shoot each other, let them. It's unfortunate, but the innocent bystander, you know, maybe the little girl or the little boy, children that are inside their homes where they get a stray bullet and, you know, they get hurt that way or their life is taken. That's a terrible thing. I don't think they would do martial law unless it started to filter over to the better neighborhoods.
Well, I don't think what I'm talking. I think they'll do martial law just because the gang members are shooting other gang members.
No, they're not going to do that. No, they're not going to.
But it's evidence of a presence of violence and a willingness to engage in violence that's substantial in Chicago. At least it implies that. And if that breaks loose, and it's not merely gangs shooting gang members, the violence breaks loose. Next thing you know, we have riots and we have burning buildings and so on. Do you think there's a probability that they will install martial law at that point?
I mean, if it goes beyond, and it goes into, you know, the area of wealth, yeah, they will protect those areas.
Well, I mean, if there's buildings around, buildings are
you know, but it, but if you have, you know, if you have, you know, buildings that are ready to fall down, if they get torched or something, no, they're not going to have martial law. Anyway.
We had an article here. We can do a little Bible thumping in the last couple of minutes of the program. There's an article written by Andy Hoffman, and the title is "The End of Trust and Rise of Real Money." That's an interesting article, and I've clipped one paragraph from it, and it says, and he writes, "Since Saturday, I, Andy Hoffman, amassed three full pages of horrible headlines, each encapsulated an overarching theme of mistrust of politicians, corporations, and most of all, central banks. Quite obviously, the historical fraud perpetrated by the evil troika of Washington, Wall Street, and the mainstream media, as well as their foreign counterparts, of the evil tripod of money printing, market manipulation, and propaganda, is causing an accelerating collapse of worldwide trust of information, political and geopolitical relationships, the law, and fiat currency. This is why cryptocurrencies are explosively rising and why, when the precious metals suppression is inevitably overcome by surging physical demand, a new, unprecedented, and potentially glorious era of real money will arrive." Now, his article, it was extensive, and I only took one paragraph, central paragraph, out of the article. His argument is that with trust diminishing, rise of real money is close by. And that's not an irrational argument. There are 42 verses in the Bible that warn against trusting another man. The strongest of those warnings may be Jeremiah 17, 5, verses 5 through 8, which read, "5, thus says the Lord, cursed is the man who trusts in man and makes flesh his strength, whose heart departs from the Lord." And it goes on and says, "Blessed is the man who trusts in the Lord and whose hope is in the Lord." Now, what's this got to do with our economy? Well, what it has to do with is debt is a promise. All debt is a promise. It is a promise to pay. If you've got a piece of paper that says it's $100,000, it's somebody's promise to give you $100,000 under certain circumstances. But it's only a promise, and you have to trust this guy. "I will accept your little paper debt instrument, provided that I trust you." I say, "Okay, I think I can trust you. I think you'll make good and pay me the $100,000 I loaned you. And as long as I trust you, I am willing to take your paper debt instrument." But if we reach a point, and I think we're going to, and we must, and maybe we're already there, where people begin to realize the debt instruments are so numerous they can no longer be trusted, that there's no way we can possibly pay the existing debt, if we reach that point, people are going to lose their confidence in paper debt instruments. They are going to refuse to trust those paper debt instruments. And they're going to say, "Wait a second, the debt can't be paid." I mean, this is the whole idea when the Federal Reserve and people in government say the critical factor for finding value in our worthless Federal Reserve notes is that people trust in them. They have confidence in them. What is that confidence in? It's the confidence, the trust, is that the debt can be paid. I'll take this piece of paper, which is nothing but a promise to pay, and I'll accept it because I trust you to make good on that. But if I lose that trust, and I say, you know, I don't think you can make good on that promise anymore, it's at that point that I'm going to say, I don't want a promise to pay. I want a payment. I want you to pay me. And the vast majority of the people in this country don't understand what I'm talking about when I make that distinction between a payment and a promise to pay. But gold and silver is a payment. It's not a promise to pay. If I go ahead and borrow $100,000, silver dollars, from you, and I can give you a piece of paper and promise to repay it, you have a debt instrument, but you're not paid. I might write you a check, but you're not paid. You're not paid until I return. I make payment of 100,000 silver dollars or the equivalent in gold. The payment is tangible. The debt instrument is intangible. It's nothing but a promise. And this whole country is based on those promises to pay. Our Federal Reserve notes are based on promises to pay. They're not a payment. Somebody, you work for somebody, gives you a check for $1,000 for a week's work. Okay. Have you been paid? No. You're not paid until you've converted that $1,000 in Federal Reserve notes into something tangible. Maybe it's a house, car, boat, gold coins, whatever. But you've got to get something tangible. Up until then, it's nothing but a promise to pay, and we're living at a point in time when the promises can't be. And that's becoming increasingly obvious. And when it gets out to enough people, and they say, you know, we can't trust this system, it will be at that point that they're going to say, I need to be paid. And that means I need some gold. I need some silver. I need something tangible. Don't give me any more paper. We're out of time. I want to thank you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.